This is KGNU's Morning Magazine. It's Tuesday, May 18th. I'm Shannon Young. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on the magazine today, most families with children can look forward to receiving monthly payments starting in July as part of the American Rescue Plan. We'll check in with H2O Radio to find out what's happening this week in water. And at the bottom of the hour, we'll play our weekly comment line, comments from listeners who share their thoughts about what they hear on KGNU. At 8:30, it's How on Earth, KGNU's science show. At 9, it's The Wit and Wisdom of Alan Watts, the British philosopher, writer, and speaker, known for interpreting Eastern religious ideas for a Western audience. Then at 9:30, the Morning Sound Alternative, 2.5 hours of eclectic music until noon. But first, it's time for local and regional headlines. Governor Jared Polis signed a $34 billion budget for the next fiscal year Monday, restoring coronavirus cuts from last year and reserving a historic amount for future economic downturns. Also yesterday, the Colorado Senate approved a $5.3 billion transportation bill, sending it on to the House. It's the biggest ever attempt at a comprehensive measure to address roads, transit, electric vehicles, and climate change. One sponsor said the bill would enable significant fixes to roads and bridges across the state, while making the transportation system more resilient. New fees won't take effect until mid-2022, but are expected to raise nearly $4 billion over the next decade, hitting consumers at the gas pump, when they order items for delivery, including from Amazon and other online retailers, and when they take Uber or Lyft rides. The Colorado House of Representatives also approved a bipartisan bill to expand access to opioid overdose reversal medications. The bill now heads to the governor's desk for his signature. The bill, in certain situations, would authorize and require pharmacists who dispense an opioid to offer to prescribe or dispense an opioid overdose reversal medication. A virtual Boulder Valley School Board meeting scheduled to launch its Title IX Advisory Council has been rescheduled for May 27th. The district said it moved the original meeting after it was Google-bombed by, quote, outside people with loud music, profanities, nudity, and weapons. KGNU's Steve Miller has more.
Beatrice Sanchez and Sophie Dellinger, both Fairview High School 2020 graduates, are co-founders of BVSD Survivors. BVSD Survivors, not affiliated with BVSD, was created to raise awareness around the need for sexual violence prevention programs and their implementations district-wide. It was under Sanchez and Dellinger's suggestion that the district agreed to start the new Title IX Advisory Council. The Advisory Council's work will include providing training to staff members and sexual violence prevention education for students and parents. BVSD has partnered with Moving to End Sexual Assault and Safe House Progressive Alliance for Nonviolence to provide virtual parent workshops in advance of lessons for 7th and 9th graders. For the May 27th, 5 to 7 p.m. meeting, the Advisory Council is expected to address sexual violence, harassment, and gender discrimination. To attend the rescheduled virtual meeting, all participants need to contact the school district to pre-register so they can be verified by the district. Participants may submit questions during registration or after the meeting. The district's Internet Technology Department determined through an investigation that the individuals responsible for the original meeting disruption were from Brazil. I'm Steve Miller for KGNU.
Early results from last year's U.S. Census show all four counties in the Northern Front Range grew between the summers of 2019 and 2020, but only Weld County continued its growth trajectory, while Larimer and Boulder counties felt the lack of foreign migration during the pandemic. The census is expected to release individual city estimates next month, but the bottom line is families in Weld County are having more children. Larimer County remained the most populous of the four counties, followed by Boulder, Weld, and Broomfield. Both Larimer and Boulder counties saw deep cuts in the number of international migrants moving within their borders, likely related to former President Donald Trump's stricter immigration policies. A state demographer told the Boulder Daily Camera that Weld County is becoming a younger county due to more families being started or expanded there, while Boulder and Larimer counties are aging at a faster rate. The Rocky Mountain Peace and Justice Center says it has obtained documents through the Colorado Open Records Act that show Boulder government leaders worked together to avoid a public debate and fund access to trails at the former Rocky Flats nuclear weapons site. A spokesperson said local leaders ignored public concerns and shut out input from area residents in order to rush the Rocky Mountain Greenway Trail forward. The Peace and Justice Center said the documents obtained suggest coordinated actions by Boulder City staff and council members. A lawsuit filed in Colorado State Court last week is challenging the legality of Boulder City Council's process for approving Greenway funding. A Colorado man charged with participating in the January 6th riot at the U.S. Capitol has violated the conditions of his release and will likely be placed on 24/7 house arrest for killing a mountain lion. Patrick Montgomery, a hunting guide from Littleton, shot the mountain lion during a hunt in Douglas County on March 31st, even though he was ordered not to possess any guns while the federal charges against him are pending. Today is May 18th, and we just can't seem to escape from an unusually rainy start to the summer. In fact, this is the rainiest start to the year along the Front Range in 80 years. Caitlin Mensch with the National Weather Service says it hasn't rained this much since the 1940s. But with many parts of the state still suffering from drought, she says the La Nina weather pattern seems content to stick around.
It is definitely unusual to have this amount of rain, definitely much needed precipitation for sure. But yeah, it is quite unusual for this, especially this time of year where things start to dry out. And I mean, we do have that monsoon season where we start to see an uptick in precip and as we get those showers and thunderstorms, and that usually doesn't start until usually end of June into July. Extreme, but definitely well needed, especially after last season's wildfires in the fall.
As of Saturday, Denver was about a half inch of precipitation away from what the city got in all of 2020. Despite all the rain, Mensch says for much of western Colorado, April was unusually dry, with more than 60% of the state still in severe drought. Rain is expected today with a high of 65, and more rain at least through tomorrow with a high around 70 degrees. Right now outside our Boulder studios, it's 51 degrees. You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. The U.S. Treasury Department announced Monday that millions of families with children will be eligible for monthly payments starting in July. Parents are eligible to receive up to $250 per month for each child between 6 and 17 years of age. Children under 6 can receive $300 each month. The money is a partial advance on the newly expanded child tax credit. Since the payments will begin halfway through the year, the second half will be redeemable after parents file next year's taxes. The Biden administration says the measure will lift 40% of U.S. children out of poverty. Colorado legislators are considering a similar measure at a state level. Last week, state Democrats introduced two bills to reform Colorado's tax system. Sarah Barnes with the Colorado Children's Campaign says the proposals would help the state's low-income families and families of color recover from the pandemic's economic fallout. She adds tax reforms that prioritize kids can help bring tens of thousands of Colorado children out of poverty.
The Earned Income Tax Credit and the Child Tax Credit are two of the most effective tools we have to fight child poverty. So those two tax credits taken together lift more kids out of poverty than any other program we have available.
HB 1311 would double Colorado's earned income tax credit from 10% to 20% of the federal credit. The measure would also provide funding for the state's child tax credit, passed in 2013 for the first time. Alongside companion bill H-Bill 1312, the proposal aims to pay for the tax credits by removing tax loopholes for the state's wealthiest residents and corporations, a move critics warn could blunt the state's economic recovery. The bill's proponents say the reforms will make the state code fairer for the families and small businesses that drive Colorado's economy. Barnes notes getting additional money into the pockets of families with kids will help them pay for necessities like rent, food, and child care. She says money invested in kids now also benefits the economy in the long term.
And as those kids grow up and become adults, they are also more likely to go on to college, and they're more likely to be able to work more and earn more in adulthood because of the money coming into their families when they're kids.
A recent survey found more than 70% of Colorado voters support eliminating outdated tax exemptions and credits for corporations and wealthy individuals. The legislation targets tax loopholes that the state auditor's office found are not performing as intended by creating jobs or growing the economy or benefiting most taxpayers, including severance tax credits and exemptions for oil, gas, and coal production. Time now for This Week in Water from H2O Radio.
As drought worsens, the feds turn off the tap. That story and more on H2O Radio's weekly news report. I'm Jamie Sudler.
I'm Franny Halperin, and it's This Week in Water.
Water cutoffs, destroyed crops, and demonstrations. In Western North America, it's shaping up to be the worst water crisis in generations as severe drought stretches from Canada to Mexico.
The Bureau of Reclamation announced last week that it would close a primary canal of the massive Klamath Reclamation Project, which leaves many farmers and ranchers in southern Oregon and northern California with no water this summer.
Instead, much of the water will stay in Upper Klamath Lake, honoring senior rights that the Klamath tribes have to protect two endangered fish species.
Irrigators reacted to the news with disbelief and said their livelihood is threatened if they can't get water from the lake. Some 30 protesters asked local officials to defy the federal order.
The restriction also means water will not be sent downstream to sustain coho salmon in the Klamath River and millions of birds that frequent a wildlife refuge as they migrate on the Pacific Flyway.
Farther south, young Chinook salmon, which normally swim down the American River near Sacramento to the Pacific Ocean, are making the journey by truck. Because of the drought, rivers are low, and that makes the water too warm for the fish to survive.
California plans to truck 17 million of the smolt, as the young salmon are called, from various hatcheries to the San Francisco Bay, an emergency step not taken since the last major drought in 2014.
Also, some farmers in the Central Valley of California are destroying their crops ahead of summer because of uncertainty whether they'll get any water. One farmer took out his asparagus to save water for other crops and said thousands of acres won't get planted.
Many farm workers will lose jobs, and the effects will also be felt on grocery store shelves.
Most big ships on the ocean burn a cheap, heavy fuel oil that emits sulfur into the atmosphere, which contributes to acid rain and smog. So last year, the International Maritime Organization passed a rule to cut that pollution from exhaust.
Now many ship owners are using equipment that sprays the emissions with water before they leave smokestacks to contain the pollutants.
Often the polluted water is dumped at ports and sometimes near sensitive coral reefs, according to researchers at the International Council on Clean Transportation. They say the discharges occur in ecologically sensitive areas like the Great Barrier Reef, the Baltic Sea, and the Galapagos Islands.
The shipping industry says pollutants in the waste don't exceed national and international limits, and there's no evidence of harm. But researchers say the scrubber water poses a growing threat, and they want to see such systems outlawed.
Cruise ships discharge the most waste while in ports, where they burn fuel to power casinos, pools, air conditioning, and other amenities. They're usually docked in shallow water, where pollutants can accumulate rapidly.
16 countries have banned the scrubbers, but the researchers say instead of burning the heavy oil, the solution is for ships to use cleaner but more expensive fuel.
Climate change is adding new words to our lexicon to depict the impacts of a warming planet. One is ghost forests, a term that evokes what's happening to coastal wetlands as sea levels rise and extreme storms send saltwater farther inland. That salty seawater overtakes fresh water the trees rely on, slowly poisoning them and leaving a haunted scene of tall gray sticks protruding into the air.
Although observations of dead trees near shorelines were first described in the early 1900s, there's been a significant increase in the phenomena, especially along the Atlantic seaboard of the U.S.
And according to new research from North Carolina State University, the dead trees themselves are contributing to climate change by releasing greenhouse gas emissions in the form of tree farts, their term, not ours, but a new addition to our growing climate vocabulary.
The team found the farts by measuring the carbon dioxide, methane, and nitrous oxide gases coming from standing dead trees called snags, and also from surrounding soil. Although overall average emissions from soils were approximately 4 times higher than from the snags, the researchers noted that trees did contribute significantly and could add up as more wetlands succumbed to saltwater inundation.
And finally, as the planet warms, air conditioning use will likely increase, as will the demand for water and the necessity to conserve every drop or reuse them. That's the idea behind a growing trend to take water that's a byproduct of air conditioning systems called condensate and use it for everything from irrigating plants to flushing toilets.
Companies like Microsoft are using condensate to water landscaping at their massive campuses in Israel, the UK, and India, and cities are looking to stretch their supply as far as they can, too.
Last month, Austin City Council approved a funding program to incentivize developers to collect, treat, and reuse air conditioning condensate for non-potable purposes. Similar programs already exist in San Francisco and San Antonio.
There are a few obstacles to everyone tapping into their air conditioners. There are upfront costs to retrofit the systems, and the condensate forms better in hot, humid places like the Deep South rather than the Dry West, where solutions like these would be welcome.
Also, it's better suited to larger buildings with bigger systems like San Diego International Airport, which in 2019 turned condensate into beer.
The airport partnered with Ballast Point Brewing to turn some of the water from its cooling towers into a lighter German-style Kolsch called Santess Pilot, which according to their website is a light and crisp brew with notes of ripe fruit.
That's it for this week in Water. We'll see you next time.
Whether you like your music cool or caliente, Simón, que you'll hear it all on Corriente, Música para la Gente.
Una nación bajo Dios indivisible con libertad y justicia para todos.
2 hours of Latin music and cultura latina every Tuesday night at 8 o'clock only on KGNU. K-G-N-U, la la.
COVID-19 vaccinations are available in Colorado. Find a provider near you and answers to your COVID-19 vaccination questions at cocovidvaccine.org.
And now we check in with KGNU's comment line when we hear what's on the minds of listeners. This week there was only one comment in the voicemail box. We go to that now.
Hi. I'm not sure if I'm meeting this at the right place, but on the show that's on right now, 4:15 on Friday, there is incorrect information that a woman is talking about, and I don't think it's fair that the information she's talking about between the Palestinians and the Israelis. And anyway, I wish y'all could be careful of what you put on and at least let people talk on both sides and give the complete information. It's really putting Israel down, and that is not right. There are things going on that are not being talked about. My name is Barbara.
A reminder that if you'd like to share a comment with KGNU, call us at 303-447-9911. We play the messages back on Tuesday mornings at 8:25 during the Morning Magazine. And now we hear from Roz Brown with a feature about efforts to save wolves in Colorado.
They once numbered in the thousands, but Mexican gray wolves were wiped out in the U.S. by the mid-1970s, with just a handful existing in zoos. In 1998, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service released 11 Mexican gray wolves in the Southwest. Now, a pair of adults and their offspring have been relocated to the 43-square-mile Ladder Ranch owned by Ted Turner. Brian Bird is with the group Defenders of Wildlife.
We are really happy about this result. I mean, we support the service's efforts to return this particular wolf family to the wild as soon as the pups are ready. And we really appreciate the willingness of Ted Turner and the Turner Endangered Species Fund to host this young wolf family. They're very capable at the Turner Endangered Species Fund, and they've assessed the situation to know that this wolf family can survive and, you know, readapt to the wild on their property without causing any trouble.
Bird says Ladder Ranch and the Turner Endangered Species Fund is a site of other species recovery, including black-footed ferrets.
And it has a long history because, of course, Turner Endangered Species Fund and the Ladder Ranch in particular have hosted wolves for release on their property in the past. So, you know, they have a long history with the Mexican gray wolf recovery program in New Mexico. And they're a valued partner and they're a great leader on this issue for the private land community to demonstrate that coexistence with the Mexican gray wolf is possible. What's a first about this is that this is a wolf family that was taken out of the wild because they were deemed a nuisance. So that's what's unique, is that this family has come from the wild. It's, you know, they were held in captivity until the female birthed her pups and the pups are old enough to go back into the wild. And now they're being released back into the wild. And that's what's unique here, is that for the last several years, the Fish and Wildlife Service has agreed with the states of New Mexico and Arizona's demand that they not release any adult pairs of wolves into the wild at all, whether that's on private or federal property. The states, that's been one of the demands of the states. And the Fish and Wildlife Service has agreed to do that, even though they're not required by law to agree to that.
Although their numbers have grown slowly, they remain the most endangered subspecies of wolf in the world because of compromised genetics, human intolerance, and reluctance to release more individuals and bonded pairs to the wild. Bert says relocating the wolves to private property is pretty unusual.
So what's really unique here is that we haven't seen an adult pair of wolves released into the wild in many years. Even though this one was in the wild originally, and I think the reason this is all happening is because the Fish and Wildlife Service and the state of New Mexico, they see the value, the genetic value of this wolf pair. The male in particular is very valuable, his genetics. And as you know, we have a genetic bottleneck in the wild with these Mexican gray wolves. They are as closely related as brothers and sisters. So when you get genetic diversity that was introduced into this population through cross-fostering, it's really important to keep that genetic diversity in the wild.
Because the male wolf was cross-fostered, Bird says it's considered one of the most genetically valuable in the wild population and a great candidate for boosting survival of the threatened carnivore.
He was bred with the important genetics that are in captivity still. And so what's the recovery program is trying to do is get that genetic diversity back into the wild population.
That was Roz Brown for the Morning Magazine. We are out of time for today.